Hello, and welcome to the Zeitgeist 19 podcast, curating the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Piriya-Cohen and Elizabeth Zhivkova.
Welcome back to As Above, So Below series, created in collaboration between Zeitgeist 19 and One Ocean Foundation. Today, we are diving deep, quite literally, into the world of oceans, ice, and image with a guest whose lens has captured some of the most fragile and awe-inspiring environments on Earth. Our guest is Christian Clowers, photographer, explorer, public speaker, and environmental advocate. From the remote polar regions to the depths of the ocean, Christian's work documents not just the beauty of the planet, but the urgency of preserving it. His expeditions, often in collaboration with scientific and environmental organizations, take him to the front lines of climate change, where he uses visual storytelling to connect us to the vast, changing landscapes of our world. Christian, welcome. Let's start at the very beginning and what first drew you to the polar regions. As the ice melts, the oceans rise and the ecosystems shift. What have you noticed are the impacts on both local and global climate system in terms of environmental, economic and social implications?
Well, on every kind of level, either northern or southern hemisphere, whether it's north of the polar circle, the Arctic circle, or south of the Antarctic circle, I think you can already see it and we can measure it. So IPCC reports all over the years are more and more alarming. And me as a photographer, for example, in Svalbard, but also Greenland, I'm going back many, many years. And over the years already, I can tell you as a witness that I see the change. I can observe it. I see how glaciers are keeping on retreating, are diminishing in volume. I see how stilt houses and infrastructure north of the Arctic Circle is already sometimes having a certain angle because of permafrost thaw and horizontal movements, you can say, of the swampy underground, because you know it's really defreezing there, and so all of this infrastructure is also very harmful, vulnerable. Also, coastal communities and the biodiversity that lives there. I'll give you an example. September 2024 was the last time I was in Arctic Canada, in Nunavut, in Arctic Bay, it's called. It's the Northwest Passage. It's really high up there. And I had an interview with an Inuit, and he told me that last year they saw butterflies and they saw bumblebees and they saw all kinds of insects and creatures they never saw before. So a lot is moving on, a lot is happening, a lot is changing, and so is the lifestyle of a lot of people, whether it's Inuit or Sami or indigenous people in Russian Arctic. A lot is happening all over the world, actually, not only in the Arctic. So I can keep on going if you want. So, for example, I do a lot of efforts in the Pacific region specifically because these are island communities, atoll states with a lack of altitude. And especially there, you see every centimeter really is very impactful on in many ways, whether it's coastal erosion, taking land away every time again, or infiltration of salty water and salinization of natural resources and so on, and also vegetation. So all of these things are visible and over the years increasing, unfortunately.
Thanks, Christian, for sharing with us these insightful and alarming observations. When I met you at COP29, I was fascinated by your meaningful mission of building an archive for the future generations. Can you tell us more about your photography practice, looking through the lens of science and exploration? Your images often capture a profound stillness, and yet there's an urgency beneath the surface. What are you trying to encapsulate?
So yes, my photography is deeply rooted in scientific exploration, aiming to document and to communicate environmental change. And really showing the fragility between human beings and nature, us as one of the 8 million species, threatening 1 million out of those 8 million species into extinction. So with my camera, it's twofold. I show impact of nature, taking revenge, you can say, with storms and king tides and floods and droughts and so on, but also impact of our footprint, the way you use land, the way we cope with biodiversity on this planet and with forestry and with our oceans and so on. So impact is one thing. The other thing is the vulnerability, the beauty, the last wilderness on our planet that we really should preserve. That is also part of my mission, to show really what planet Earth has to offer, the beauty that is still there, that is still out there. Mostly on uninhabited islands, it's very vulnerable, very visible also. And so the least impact would leave an enormous footprint on the ecosystems. So scientists are measuring that. I document scientists that are measuring that with the techniques and methods they use, the instruments and so on. They need to be calibrated. I interview them. I want to understand what they're doing. And it is my goal, my mission, to also tell the world what is going on, tell the world the beauty we should preserve, what is at stake to really protect and preserve, and also explain to everyone from young to old generations the importance of scientific work, whether it's marine sciences or polar sciences or scientists that are going to these sub-Antarctic vulnerable islands with specific research vessels. Of governments or institutions. So it's really in between, in between us as a species and nature. And the main mission is also showing that we are a small part of nature and that everything that we do has a consequence not only for all those other species, but also for ourselves, because we are part of it. We're part of a holistic entity. And this is really the way indigenous people think. And I think this is part of the solution. If we all start to have that insight and the knowledge of, the impact of how we live and also that, the way we consume and transport ourselves and the way we eat and so on. So this is really what my mission is about. And my mission is a visual storytelling mission. And so I do this with my photography and the story behind each image.
Thank you for sharing your mission with us, Christian, along with your knowledge and fascinating experience in the field. You mentioned that photography is essentially storytelling, and I'd like to expand on that. Why is storytelling fundamental to the ocean decade? With the upcoming UN Ocean Conference, why do you believe uniting art, science, and policymaking is more urgent than ever?
Well, that is a very relevant question. I would say in order to mobilize society, you need to take away barriers. And a barrier would be a scientific paper to, for example, an artist. If I read it, I'm like maybe a little bit not of a good example. I would be more in between. But I see there are barriers. Scientists, they come up with numbers, with papers, data sheets. Policymakers, they have their strategy reports and policy reports and so on. And then the industry, well, they have business plans. And so they don't really understand each other. And I think the visual approach of storytelling, image, well, you don't need even language to have a look at a photo and understand what is going on. With a photo, you can tell 100,000 words, as they say, and it's really true. You can evoke emotions. You can get really, you can touch something. You can show something that is going on in a very direct way or even indirect and more suggestive way. It's a very powerful tool for storytelling. So I believe that with a photo exhibition, for example, with a lecture or keynote showing also photos, that is very relevant also in the context of the ocean decade to really reach a higher level of understanding and insight and to really raise awareness globally.
My final question to you, Christian, is about hope, something we could all use a bit more of these days. As we enter a new era of exploration, how do you see it contributing to sustaining life on Earth? And in your view, what is the most hopeful aspect of this new age?
Well, I think that a lot of people really are still hopeful, and we should. And there are a lot of very positive initiatives. A lot of science is also happening out there. I think there is a lot of collaboration and meaningful collaboration on different levels. And so, well, I'm at least very hopeful. And I think we should, we should never give up. So that's also a personal thing. Never give up. It's really important to continue doing what you are believing in. And I'm sure that we will get there, even as a human species. So. Another aspect of my mission is really to put also Belgium as a country on the map. I mean, we are a very tiny country, a very small country, but still very with a very relevant contribution worldwide in terms of scientific progress and research. So we have a beautiful research vessel called the Belgica. We have a research base on Antarctica, which is actually the only one that is net zero. It is completely sustainable also in terms of water and waste management. It is the only one on the entire continent, yet the world doesn't know about it. And for example, I just returned from Switzerland, from Jungfraujoch, which is 3,571 meters high. You can visit Jungfraujoch as a tourist, but then 4 p.m. you have to go down. And so 4 p.m. is the moment I go up to stay overnight with the scientists, document their research instruments, and especially their work, what they're doing. And the majority of what they're doing is atmospheric measurements over the years. And the Belgians, the Université de Liège, University of Liège, they're doing very consistently research about CO2, about methane, about aerosols, so dust and particles coming from Sahara and so on, contributing to the albedo effect, which is basically the dark particles that are absorbing sunlight and including heat, and so accelerating, amplifying the melt of glacier ice. So all of this is being done there as well by Belgian scientists. They have a very good reputation. And this is just one of the examples. So another thing, so next Wednesday, I'm leaving again to the Antarctic. So I will have all of my gear with me. And so we are going specifically to the Wilkins Ice Shelf, which is one of these tipping points. So it's very important that I get, that I reach it, that I can get there and take photos. So once this ice shelf is collapsing, a lot of the mass of the glacier, the ice mass, will just flow into the ocean, contributing to sea level rise, since it's fresh water, it's glacial ice. So this is one of these tipping points. It's a very problematic point on around the Antarctic continent. A little bit further is the Twain's Glacier, which is one of the, well, they call it the Doomsday Glacier. It is a similar story, just larger in volume. That is my next project. And then from there, I will actually go to Pitcairn. This is all the way around. So Pitcairn is like in the middle. It's a dot. It's a rock with about 40 people, infamous for the mutiny on the Bounty, which happened there about 230 years ago, I think, something like that. And so, my mission is like observing, documenting, and understanding how they cope with water, with waste, with energy. So these people survive on a rock in the middle of the Pacific. So I wonder, what do they have? Do they have natural resources? What do they do with their electricity? How do they make electricity? What do they do with everything they import with the vessel that comes every 2 months? So it's really interesting. I will be there. I will stay amongst the families and sleep there. This is the next project, so feel free to follow me.
Thank you, Christian, for this hopeful conversation.
Thank you for having me, for hosting me.
Christian Klauers reminds us that beauty is not a luxury. It's a warning and a call to action. His images are not just postcards from the edge. They are evidence, they are memory, and they are love letters to a planet in peril. Until next time, stay curious, stay kind, and keep listening to the world around you.